is knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 626. Jason Lindgren is with me and Jet Blake returns. For those of you who haven't figured it out yet, Jet Blake is his given name is Weston Warren. He went under the name Jet Blake due to the censorship and the loss of platforms, which most of us are familiar with. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a fine good morning.
It's a pleasure to have Weston back. It's always interesting. So let's jump into this. Welcome back, Weston. Is there anything you'd like to add before we get started?
No, I'm anxious to do the show and see what kind of questions you have, however you want to steer the next hour to 2 hours.
All right. I'm going to start by talking. We're going to actually put up a sponsored link to what I consider a very useful device that you've got. I think a lot of people have already seen it. It's an air surface purification, like an air filter looking thing. Can you talk about that for a second? There will be a sponsored link on the sponsored page. And just talking with Weston, it's crazy. Most of the ones you buy are basically dust collectors. But can you just take a couple of minutes here to tell us about the air surface purification tech?
Yeah, sure. The technology I worked on had its roots in the space program, like the low orbit space shuttle and International Space Station. So that particular design, another engineer and I were able to improve it by 1,000%. How the technology works is we're able to produce a bipolar ion cluster, a bipolar ion plasma cluster that consists of positive hydrogen ions and negative oxygen ions simultaneously. So you have a positive hydrogen, negative oxygen ions, they clump together, becoming bipolar. And while they're in their charged or activated state, when these clusters are propelled, leaving the machine, into the environment through Brownian motion, they'll seek equilibrium. So they'll reach the ceiling, the floor, anywhere ambient air can reach. And if there's a contaminant, bacteria, mold, mildew, small particulates, it could be nanoparticulates, VOCs, volatile organic compounds, it will neutralize or kill the contaminant on contact. Then the ion clusters break down into trace amounts of H2O, water vapor, and CO2. So it's a very safe air and surface purification technology. It really is duplicating what happens in nature. When there's a thunderstorm, the same ion clusters are created. You have corona discharge, or the energy from lightning activity, mixing with the gases in the atmosphere. So trillions of positive hydrogen, negative oxygen ion clusters, O3, ozone, three molecules of oxygen. That's all created in a thunderstorm, and that's how the Earth cleanses the air and surfaces. If that process didn't exist, no life would exist on Earth, even at the microbial level. So it's a natural oxidation cleaning process. That's why you have that fresh smell after a thunderstorm. Everything has been cleaned and purified, or that fresh smell at an active waterfall. Same conditions are being created. So we're basically creating a thunderstorm without the lightning and water.
Wow.
So we're duplicating nature's genius. It's 100% safe for humans, plants, and animals. No side effects whatsoever. Hydrogen, oxygen, ions, but it's effective on gram-negative, gram-positive bacteria, volatile organic compounds, that would be acrylics, formaldehydes, glues that you have in building materials, or if you're a hair salon, an auto body shop, any of those off-gassing chemicals, it neutralizes those as well.
How about aerosol salts? That's why I took an interest in this. I've been able to film the sun 2 days since this year began because of the nonstop spraying of chemtrails. Do you feel like your device, like I like to open up my windows and air out the house, but on days when they're spraying, I don't like it. So do you think your device will help in that regard?
Oh, yes. We have certain coded days in our household, in a lab, when there's been heavy activity. We call it atmospheric salting.
Yep.
In our scientific group, but there's other terms, geoengineering, the street term chemtrails, cloud seeding. There's a lot of names. It's all the same thing. We call it the atmospheric salting. When we know there's a heavy activity, we absolutely have our facilities and all the windows closed and our machines running on high. Yeah, because it definitely works at a nano particulate size, graphene oxide, the barium, aluminum salts, because you're dealing with molecular levels. I'm using atomic theory terms. That's what the audience is most familiar with. We were all taught atomic theory in school. Field theory, I'd be using different terminologies, but not many people are schooled in that or even aware of field theory. But atomic theory, when you're dealing with hydrogen and oxygen, these are basic building components. So the nanoparticulates from the spraying are much larger than the hydrogen and oxygen ion clusters. So we're able to combat at the smallest atomic level with our technology.
When you clean them out and they've been spraying heavily in the atmosphere, can you see that crap inside, you know, when you're cleaning it out?
No, I'm glad you brought that up. Our technology is active, not passive. So a lot of what we call toys or dust collectors that you'll see on the internet, there's hundreds of thousands of them, they'll have a controlled zone where it sucks air through maybe a filter, HEPA filter system, charcoal filter, it might have a UV bulb. That's called passive. It's hoping that the air comes through a kill zone or a clean box zone and traps. Our ion clusters, it's an active system. So it goes out into the environment, ceiling, floor, closets, down a hallway, basements, wherever. So what happens when it contacts VOCs, in this case, or these particulates, it'll clump them together in what we call a molecular ash. So these ion clusters act like magnets, and they will collect fine dust and particulates, even to where the eye can't see it, and clump them all together. And it gets to a point where that molecular ash is too heavy to stay suspended in the air. So it falls to the floor, and it gets it out of the breathing zone. Well, when it falls to the floor, this is still so small. These aerosols are still so, the eye can't see it, but it's on the floor, and they're magnetized, clumped together, they're inactive, or they've been neutralized by an OH radical on the tail end of that chemical compound. I don't want to get into too much of the chemistry. It's way too complicated. But it's on the floor, it's neutralized, it's inactive. But it's not like they spray heavily on the weekend and Monday you see an eighth-inch film on the floor and you're like, oh boy, I got to sweep and mop this up. No, it's so small, you would have to have electron microscopes, which we've had. Then you can see the grouping of the particulates together.
Well, I don't know about all you guys, but the amount of spraying that's been going on where I am, it's disturbing. But I want to shift gears here. I want to get into the second sun and what you call the black or dark star. And I want to try to determine if we're talking about the same thing. Before I do that, Jason, is there anything you want to get in before I launch into this?
Well, with the filters, you have more than one kind, don't you? Don't you have multiple sizes and things like that for different applications? There's like a one for the room and then one for a full house HVAC system, that kind of thing.
I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you. It's very interesting. We have residential and commercial versions. The residential, very popular. Yes, they come in different shapes and sizes. We're the first ones ever to have a 5-volt portable. It's called the Carry Ion. It's the size of a aluminum soda can. And it does an immediate area, picture like a 10-foot circle. You're allowed to take a TSA on an airline. Every time I fly, there's always people coughing and sneezing next to me, so you can have it running in your lap, fits in a cup holder of a car. We have units that can do whole rooms or a floor, two-bedroom apartment condo. We have an HVAC probe that can do an entire house if you have 2-3-story house because it fits into the supply duct system of your central heating and air conditioning. But we have commercial units. Our technology kills all hospital secondary infections. The scientific data is there. In the food industry, E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria. In plant industry, when you have greenhouses, whether it's a cannabis crop or if it's fruits and vegetables, high-end flowers, greenhouses kills the plant molds and plant pathogens. So the commercial industry is a huge business. The CAFOs, where you have turkeys and chickens, extensive studies. I worked with University of Arkansas and other universities to help keep the poultry healthy and less disease in that particular business model. But what's interesting is in the United States, I found out our technologies are used in a lot of hospitals around the world, not in the United States. It's very interesting, the mindset and the legalese and the business model. That's a whole nother show. why is this not in every hospital, every surgery room, like it is in other countries, but not the United States? Very frustrating. I can tell you, working over 20 years in this technology, am I an expert? Yeah, absolutely, I am in this field. I left the medical industry and some related, and I'll never, ever deal with them again in the United States. It's finished. It's over. Stick a fork in it. It's dead. It's unfortunate. But yeah, it's very effective and commercial. So depending on your business and what you do, there's commercial units. And then everyone should have a household unit or a portable unit, because you can't run away from chemtrail contaminants, from these graphene oxide particulates. You can't run away from bacteria. You can't run away from people coughing and sneezing. It's just everywhere you go. So it's not like I'm saying that you need to live in a plastic bubble, like those that don't have an immune system, but this will absolutely help you sleep better at night. It'll help give your immune system a rest so it can regenerate. So there's a lot of positive aspects. Plants benefit from it, pets benefit from it, and all humans.
All right, you guys ready to jump into the topic at hand here?
Mm-hmm.
So I listened to your USA Watchdog interview that you did, and I reviewed the first talk that you and I had, and I want to try to determine if what I discovered in May of 2015, which I call the second sun, for those that are brand new, I filmed it a number of times, and currently I leave evidence in the imagery that I create and put up on the website. It looks like a lopsided glow behind our sun. What I think happens now, or my best guess, and I should be completely honest because this is a best guess, is that for some reason at certain times, due to the angle we see things from, in the morning there's separation between the two bodies, but almost immediately as the sun appears to rise up, it tucks in behind our sun. Now, there have been times when people have filmed it and it might have 20 or maybe even 30 degrees of separation. But most of the times, even back in the day when I discovered it, it's more like 5 or 10 degrees of separation. Let's try to determine if what you're describing as a black star or a dark star could possibly be the same thing that I'm filming. Is that enough to get us going?
Yes. One, I don't know if I mentioned it in our first interview. When I was on Greg's show, he used the black star. To clarify, I don't know if it's a black star. Black star is theoretical if you were to do a search engine on the internet. What I had mentioned is, I call it an anomaly. But maybe if someone goes, well, what do you call it? What do you call it? And they're pressuring me. Well, what do you call the thing? I go, I don't know. That's an anomaly. But if you're pressuring me, then its closest definition would be, I would say, a black star. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying that would be the closest thing that I would use to describe this electromagnetic frequency emitter.
So just a second. Are you implying that it should not be detectable in the visual spectrum?
Yeah, that's our understanding, as it's emitting electromagnetic energy far left of long wave. So our sun emits long wave, and then you have your AM, FM, microwave, infrared, visible light, ultraviolet, ABC, hard soft X-ray, gamma ray. This would be emitting far left, undetectable to current instrumentation that man has today. So that's why black star, meaning it's kind of stealthy, that you can't pick it up on instruments that are known in the scientific community today.
That also implies, if I'm following you correctly, that it's very high vibrational. So if I followed you correctly, when I go out and I film the sun the way that I do it, I'm looking in the hydrogen alpha wavelength, just so everybody knows what I'm talking about. The visual spectrum, we're almost blind as human beings. We see 0.003 of the electromagnetic spectrum. When I'm filming, I'm in the visual spectrum red, very far to the right in hydrogen alpha. And what my scope does is it cuts out all the brightness, extra energy, and all the wavelengths that aren't hydrogen alpha, so I can see what I see. If I followed you correctly, Weston, if I go all the way left away from red, hit blue, and then keep going, that's where what you're talking about is going to reside.
I don't think so. If you have the electromagnetic spectrum, if you're looking at a chart on a computer search engine,
yep, I'll bring one up at the same time so that I can zero in on what it is, because it sounds like my description didn't fit.
Yeah, you should get charts or graphs.
Right.
If you do images. So they're all good. A lot of good images on the internet. So in your graph, you should see in the electromagnetic spectrum, on the left, it should be radio waves, then microwaves, then infrared, then the visible light spectrum. And that's where you have the Roy G. Biv, the colors of the rainbow. You have red on the left. And then you get into the orange, yellow, and then you get into green. And then the greens transfer into blue and violet, purple. Then you get into the ultraviolet. There's ABC, ultraviolet. I think in Europe, it's AVX. And then you have soft and hard X-ray and gamma ray. So what I'm talking about is on that electromagnetic spectrum chart, this emitter would be far left of the radio waves. When you're at X-ray and gamma ray, you're at the very far right of the electromagnetic spectrum of what our sun's producing. This anomaly is far left of what our sun is producing. It's a wavelength that there's no known instrumentation built to detect this.
Okay, I understand what you're saying here. Okay, I get it. So it's beyond gamma.
Well, technically it could be, but that's a very private conversation on field theory, but that's
okay. Let me pull this back around. I didn't do a very good job there. So what I'm trying to determine, is there any possibility that what I'm calling the second sun and filming is the inbound object? And if I remember what you said, it's coming in kind of from the south up towards the ecliptic or the plane where you find the planets.
Right.
My thing would be is, all the time that I have been aware of what I'm calling the second sun, it's in the vicinity of our sun. And that's what got me thinking. If there's an inbound object, and I think you might have marked 2004 as an important detection date or functions or something, it wouldn't always be detected near the sun, would it?
No.
So I think with that one piece of information, I can start to determine that what I'm filming is probably not what you're describing.
Correct. It's a different anomaly, it seems like.
I think so. And so what you've done in what you're calling a dark star or a black star is you've began to try to line it up with major events in this world in the past. So I'm just making this distinction because I'm nearly convinced, as convinced as I can be, that the so-called second sun is not what's now being described as the black star.
Yeah, what you're describing and what you might be picking up on how you've manipulated your telescope cameras, you could be picking up something completely different than what I'm talking about as far as the physical description, but they could all be related. And solar system harmonics, which has been, maybe this knowledge has been withheld from humanity for whatever reasons.
Could the object that you're describing be affecting the sun in some way? And that's what Crow's picking up?
Yeah, I don't know. We're in unknown territory. You know, in oceans, I don't know what the figure is, maybe some of the listening audience would know, but our oceans, for example, you hear statistics, maybe 16-20% of our oceans, the knowledge and maybe mapping or how many species are still yet have been discovered, maybe close to 80% of the oceans is still mysterious. And that's here on home planet. How much of our solar system is unknown? I think it's similar to how much of our oceans is unknown. Or we're under the impression, I was growing up, high school and college, that we pretty much have a wrap on how the solar system works and the celestial bodies, what's considered a planet, a gas giant, its moons or satellites, what's a dwarf planet. And I think the knowledge is very limited. And I think how our solar system really works, the size of our solar system, or what interacts with our solar system, I think the true knowledge absolutely has been hidden from the general public. And it's on a need-to-know basis. And that knowledge, the anomaly of this electromagnetic emitter, whether it's a black star or not, or what you might be detecting because of your particular equipment that you're using, I wouldn't be surprised if the COG, continuity of government, and other agencies know that. It's never going to hit the public. And your independent research, no pun intended, you're focused on that. we've noticed that there's definitely a second electromagnetic emitter other than our sun. That's what's affecting the Earth's core. I think we're stumbling upon this as independent researchers, but it's not verified by traditional science or news agencies, and it never will be. So I think they're hiding maybe 50 to 80% of what's really gone in our solar system or the outreaches of our solar system. That information is not being forwarded to the general public. And then people like you and I, the other scientists, like as we stumble across things and we gather data, we're just trying to freely forward this to the listening audience, just to give a heads up and just trying to be part of a human family saying, hey, here's what I've noticed. And we're sharing this with no motives attached to it. And that's the best we can do, because I think the real information will never reach us. So it's up to people like you and I and others to discover these things and then be bold enough to go on the internet and share what we've observed. And then, of course, you know, you get the trolls and the hate mail. That's part of the territory, unfortunately. But we're not cowards. We're willing to be laughed and scorned and ridiculed. But there are enough people that listen and would appreciate a heads up and get them to at least start thinking of these possibilities and then prepare accordingly.
I agree with you. And I would put the misinformation and non-information about not only the ocean, but what is called space. It's something in the 90 percentile. But to pull it back around, isn't it interesting that in 2015, I start picking up a thing that basically looks like a binary to our sun? That's 10 years ago now. And I'm about to put up a member solar video, because by chance, I found the first filming that I did. And I'm going to run the audio. My wife and I are doing this. I had forgotten. See, what happened is when I released the lunar wave, all hell broke loose. Unfortunately, I was also the second guy, like a year and a half later in the spring. So the lunar wave controversy was still going on as I made this other discovery. And I consciously, first of all, I wasn't sure what I was seeing. And I was reading online that the Edelongs can create echoes and all this stuff. So I kind of buried it away. But now that I've found the old clip, and believe me, if you're wondering how I could lose something, Jason came up to get my files. I think you filled, what, 3 hard drives, Jason?
I brought 2 6-terabyte hard drives with me. I put all of the files on one of them, and then I duplicated it just for safety's sake.
And he didn't even get everything. But to pull it back around, I filmed it with a full spectrum camera the first time, and I'm going to run this footage for everyone. But isn't it interesting, Weston, that I'm discovering what may well be the binary to our sun, which is kind of the way I'm leaning. And at the same time, you're picking up this other thing. It's almost like these things are going to converge, these things that we know nothing about. And that one thing alone makes this very interesting. Now, Weston, I texted you a clip like yesterday, I think it was. Did you see it?
Yes, it was real brief, like 10 seconds.
Yes, I went out to film for 3 hours and the chem planes came and I got an hour. So you'll notice that's one of the, and I'm going to run this footage for everyone, you will see it. Down on the lower left limb of the sun is one of the largest prominences that I've seen in quite some time. At the same time as I was setting up yesterday, maybe 40 or 50 degrees away from the sun was the sliver moon. So on the opposite side of the sun, as I'm seeing the moon visually closer than I ever have, I'm seeing this huge anomaly. But when I produce the stills, and I'll let you see them, Weston, you'll see that behind that prominence is the glow, lopsided glow of the other object that I am filming. But I'm almost content to say at this point that what I am filming, I don't believe is the same object that you're describing, which pulls me back to you are drawing lines and currently of a mind that as this other object approaches, there's going to be catastrophes and that has probably happened before.
Yeah, potential catastrophes. If you use the word catastrophes, that could be loss of human life, loss of property or infrastructure. This would be scientifically, you can say, and who would not agree with this statement? Has the Earth ever been terraformed or go through major geological events in its history?
We have reason to believe that it has, yes.
Yeah, it has. Okay, well, then why would someone think that it's impossible for any geological event to happen while you're alive on Earth? Can someone tell me that when you were born, you were given a certificate, a guarantee that, oh, you'll live your entire life and there'll be no geological events to worry about. You'll be able to live 80, 90 years, go to movies, eat popcorn, buy your favorite Mustang convertible, raise a family and have grandkids, and then you peacefully fall asleep at night and transition to whatever your belief is. No. So why do people in denial thinking the earth is stable, very consistent, and there's never any geological events of major proportions that could hit in their lifetime? I can't believe how many people are under that impression.
Creatures of habit, right?
Or maybe it's through indoctrination of schooling and programming through so many people watch television and the flicker rate, and they're certainly being programmed subconsciously. I don't know what the NPCs out there, non-playable characters, where they're kind of zombie-like and they just repeat and regurgitate what they hear. I don't know. But the earth is testifying because you have expansion of the magma. You have pressures on the continental plates. You have the warming of the oceans. It's not the global warming that the UN and others want. It's not because of SUVs and too much CO2. That's hogwash. But magma's rising and it's heating up the crust, and the oceans are warming, then the ocean currents are stalling. Then the jet streams have to pick up the slack because the earth is trying to maintain temperature equilibrium. Well, then you're going to have more hurricanes, tornadoes, or one day it's 79 degrees, the next day it's 33 degrees within 6-hour swings. That's very common here in the Midwest. You're like, what's going on with this schizophrenic weather? And hailstones are getting larger and larger. Well, this is manifestation of activity going on with our earth. And our earth has a special relationship with the sun. Why wouldn't it? All the planets do, but especially the interior planets when you're dealing with Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars. Well, in the interviews that I have had, our sun, the solar cycles, 11-year period solar cycles, the solar cycles, the sun's activity has been waning. So it doesn't make sense that the earth and Mars, because the other planets are manifesting, you just don't hear it in the news. It's not just the earth. So if the sun has been declining, and it's been declining since the last 50 years, the solar cycles have been declining, why would the earth all of a sudden have an uptick with magma activity and then the ocean currents stall? It has to be some anomaly other than our sun influencing the earth. And that's where we've picked up. There has to be an electromagnetic signature, an outlier, an anomaly. And then 2004 was a crucial time period because of the signatures of what happened in 2004 with volcanic activity and that major tsunami that hit Indonesia. And then monitoring it ever since, we've had this uptick. Meanwhile, the sun is declining. We feel that the sun is getting, it's recalibrating. That could be, there's so much to talk about. I mean, as you know, we could talk 8, 12, 20, 40 hours straight with breaks in between for eating and using the restroom break just to cover this information. It's hard to do it in hour clips, but the sun is getting ready to reconfigure. And it's happened over and over and over again. We're just at a cycle where we're seeing a lot of solar system harmonics. All the gears are meshing and coming. So whether it's the anomaly that you're photographing, this electromagnetic emitter far left of the long wave spectrum, this could tie into ancient texts or prophecies also, where it's going to be a doozy. Now, the earth will always be here. The earth is not going to explode into billions of little aggregate pieces. Mars isn't going to collapse, nothing of that nature. But you can definitely be subject to influences if you're along coastal regions, if you're near hot spots, known volcanic activities, fault lines, topography of polar vortexes. There's no mistaking that. And that's where you're affected by these events. It could be based on timing and geographic location as far as your chances of surviving.
Here's the thing. Most of my life, when you hear, oh, the end of days or some big, you know, I've dismissed it. But when you begin to look at what we know now, and as the example of the second sun, that is a big, big deal. If I'm in fact filming a binary of our sun and it's gotten closer so that I can detect it now, that pretty much implies there's going to be big changes. I don't think there's anyone listening right now that isn't aware of, even in the last 5 years, how much we've changed. A lot of people might write it off to manipulation by the powers that be, but it goes beyond that as far as I can see. But when you start to realize, like, it's becoming common knowledge, all the underground facilities and all the rich people, you know, it's in the news, this guy's building a bunker, that guy. Why would you be doing things like this? And when I tie it back around, that I know for a fact there's another body by our sun, and I'm reasonably sure that it's probably the binary of our sun, that is a big deal. And when I begin to hear the things that you're laying down, I just can't dismiss it anymore. And so do you feel like you've successfully tied what you're detecting now to past events in Earth history?
Yeah, it depends. I've got nothing to hide, but this is your group's show, right? I don't know. I don't know how honest you want me to be. As not that I'm deceptive, but I mean how straightforward. If I told you in the listening audience the knowledge that I have, the group of scientists, independent scientists, my friends that I collaborate with for over 20 years now, I don't know if the listening audience could. Well, I tell you what, I don't think the listening audience could handle it. Not to put the audience down, I think it's too shocking to the human psyche, to the reality, or what we think is the reality, the norm. It's too far of an outlier. And I wouldn't blame people. I would say 90 to 95% of your listening audience would go, you know, it was okay having that guy on, that scientist from the Midwest, but I think he's lost it. I don't know if it's good to have him on the program anymore. I think he's way out there. That's exactly how it would come across. So unfortunately, we're handcuffed. I can't speak freely and tell you what we think's going on. You would never have me on the show again. It'd get thumbs down ratings, and I would be viewed as a lunatic that lost his way somewhere decades ago and should never be on the internet.
So we put information down here. Most of the information that we put down here is far from mainstream. As we sit here and talk about the solar system, I don't even accept the models. I don't even accept the descriptions of the so-called planets. And I know damn well now that what I've been told about the sun is either intentionally misleading or maybe fabricated all told because of what I've learned about it. So to come up to what you just said, if you're talking about saying in this time period, there's going to be a terrible, terrible thing, that's one thing to consider. But barring that, it's information. And places like this are the only places that we're going to get untainted information. It's not guaranteed to be correct. It's individuals living their lives, trying to do the best they can. So if you would pull back for the reason of being concerned that people won't accept it, I don't think we should do that. But if there's a different reason, then I suppose we should consider it.
Well, it depends. And again, I apologize. And maybe you could edit this. I don't know, like on the first hour, if the first hour is available to the public and the second hour is behind a paywall or membership. Yep. If there's certain things you want me to reserve for the second hour and keep certain topics for the first hour for the general, I don't know.
Well, let me explain that. In the same way that you had to take on the alias Jet Blake because of censorship is why the second hour exists. Because you're right. If we talk about anything we want in the first hour that goes out everywhere, we will feel the heat. We've felt it over and over again. Deleted YouTube channels and more. So if there is something that's sensitive in that way, yeah, we just talk about it in the second hour, but I don't feel like we should pull our punches. I think we should lay what we can on the table.
Look, this is actually pretty easy. Why don't we just wait till the second hour and he can explain what he wants to explain? This way it is behind the paywall. Then we don't have to worry about anything going out to the general public in hour one.
Can we agree on that?
We can agree on that. And then how much time do we have left on the first hour?
About 15 minutes or so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then I'll reserve that for the second hour. Then what I can say on the 10 or 15 minutes on the first hour is we feel, and here's a joke. I tell people, well, my opinion and $4 will get you a cup of coffee, right? So take everything with a grain of salt. However, I am a bona fide scientist. I do have national, international patents. I'm not a dummy. Graduated top of my class, whatever that's worth. Always have, straight A student, a jock. So I do have some street credibility there. as far as documentation and academia. But what we've noticed is our sun, the electromagnetic bandwidth, especially infrared to ultraviolet A, and I mentioned this a little bit probably in the first interview I did with you guys, there is information attached to that wavelength, and our DNA picks up that information. And the information applies to plants, the insect domain, animals, and human beings. It seems that the transmission or data is changing. I don't think I brought this up before in our last interview. The information is changing, and it seems like there's going to be a split in humanity. And it's not right down the middle. It's not 50-50. I don't mean to split that way. But I do think that there's going to be a branching off, and a certain segment of humanity, let's say who are more spiritually inclined or higher vibration, a lot of terms to use. Some say Christ consciousness. I don't know. It could be 20, 30 terms. Pick which one fits your lane and your philosophies, your belief. I don't want to step on anyone's toes. I'm trying to be neutral here. Insert your favorite saying. Those individuals will continue to receive vital information through the visible light spectrum, the infrared, ultraviolet, and it deals with your consciousness, your sanity, and what it means to behave as a human being. Also, certain animals' behaviors, their instincts, their hibernation, their flight paths, their delivery, hatching of eggs or birth, and then plant cycles. There's going to be a large portion that starts to deviate. Let's say a portion that is not at a higher vibration, has spiritual conscious awareness, and they will start turning more animalistic, unfortunately. So we're going to see a shift in human behavior, social behavior, that's very alarming. There's already evidence that it's accelerating, and it's manifesting now. And what's to be determined is, are there groups where these underground facilities, are they aware that there's a particular cycle and that they want to leverage this division and encourage a more violent, chaotic society on the surface while they quietly go underground or whatever strategies they have, and then later let there be a population reduction, a reshuffling of the deck chairs, and then they come up later with their advanced technologies and then their philosophies of an economic structure, a governance structure. That's what seems to be happening in the background. And very few people are aware of this or talk about this. I just wanted to highlight, while this is the first hour of the show, this is what we're noticing.
Well, it's reflected in what we see in the world. In this country, our food has gradually turned into basically poison. Why? In 2020, they lined people up to take shots, and I now know 12 people who are no longer here who have a direct correlation to that. Some I would have considered healthier than I am and probably would have bet they'll be here longer than me. Some of the ideas you're expressing are reflected in media. Think about what you just said. Now let's think about H.G. Wells' time machine with the Morlock underground eating the Eloy up above, as a demonstration of what you're talking about. But these upgrades, I'm with you all the way. The way I currently view it is that the sun is a bit of a lens, which makes all more important if I am truly filming a binary, because that would imply more energy and it lenses into us. But then I see them spraying the skies and blocking the sunlight. And people say that's weather mod. It's all kinds of things. But I know certainly how much sun is being blocked. Is this a direct attempt to bolster what you're talking about, to block those, what do we call them, upgrades or consciousness shifts? I think the things we see all around us can correlate with what you just laid down.
Right. So this statement I'm about to make, I hope that people don't take it wrong. Let's say the power structure, and I don't know who they are, but very powerful, and they go back thousands of years. That group, whoever's authorized, for example, the atmospheric salting, street name chemtrails. We talked in the other interview, that's well-funded, that's not stopping. I just heard recently, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know, 20 states have either passed or it's in legislation now, or we're banning chemtrails over the state of Texas or Florida, Missouri can't. Okay, fine. You can do that at a state level. You think that's going to stop? No. So whoever's doing this has ultimate control, unlimited budget. They don't answer anyone. So why is this atmospheric salting, this chemtrail going on? I think they're allowing the chatter on the internet to talk about, well, it's weather manipulation, cloud seeding, and they let that story run because they're okay with that. And there's truth to that element, but that's not the real, as long as the real story doesn't get out, they'll let that circulate the internet because you want to have certain people that are alert. You want them to have talk shows and bicker with one another politely and have opinions because it's a good way to let off steam and it's a good way to consume their energy with talk shows and research. But I don't think they ever want to get out that one of the main reasons of the cloud seeding that's going on is they're wanting to interrupt the data coming out of our sun because they don't want humanity to have a fair chance of getting an upload or a reset to a higher awareness, a higher vibration, a advancement in the human design. If they can thwart that and keep people stunted and keep people at a non-spiritual material or a Mad Max type situation, they feel it increases their odds of maintaining dominance and power. And the last thing they want is for humanity to be upgraded in a positive manner, a higher elevation. Follow me?
I am with you. So 100%. There it is. The sun is a lens. It lenses in all these energies from all these sources. Some of the sources are more powerful than others, and it does not take a genius to go outside on a nice sunny day, witness the aerosol salting, and then just in your mind calculate how much sun just got blocked. But what's more is those are conductive particles up there. They're scattering the light. But I want to add this, Weston. We got a group of people who are doing, in my view, exactly what you said. And for part of the reason is for exactly what you said. They want to keep us stunted. They want to prevent the natural upgrade that would be coming to us. If they decided they wanted to block the tide from coming in and they put all their resources and a blank check on it, they might interfere with that for some period of time. But in my heart, in my mind, in my spiritual existence, I know beyond doubt that the tide will come in again eventually. And I think it's no different than what we're talking about. But unfortunately, is it hindering things? Yes, it is. Is it terrible? Yes, it is. And I always ask, why would people poison the plants, the animals, the ground, the dirt, the air, unless they know that over some period of time, it'll get corrected? And by the way, there's some big event that's coming. And when we couple this with all the what seems to be intentional reducing of the population, I mean, they just released a story the other day that some private think tank recalculated the population of the Earth, and they were off by 50% because now there's 80 trillion people. Jason and I did episodes where we laid down the best we could that we are of a mind that the population has been falling in general since at least the 70s. And there are other researchers and authors who have backed this. So to cut to the chase, as we come close to the top of the hour, I am with you 100% on that portion of why they're spraying and what it is they're attempting to block. Jason, is there anything you want to get in before we start to wrap up hour one and come back to lay down whatever it was that Weston was alluding to?
In hour two, I would really like it if Weston could describe this whole situation in detail, most especially the repercussions for humanity.
Lay it down 1-to-1. Don't pull punches.
Are you sure?
Look, I will not be an irresponsible individual. I work very hard at what we do because we reach a lot of people, and I never want to be the cause of going the wrong way. So if you say something that is just so detrimental, well, then we won't. But we need to lay it down. because people deserve to know what they deserve to know. And short of screaming fire in a crowded theater, to use the ancient pun, that's the line. No, I won't put things out that are going to do damage. But short of that, even if it's unpopular, we should lay it down.
Yeah. It's not screaming fire in a movie theater. It's not that. It's just that I can answer that question. It's just you're going to get an answer to that. It'll be interesting.
Okay, we will do that. And, you know, a lot of people get upset and they always make jibes about the paywall. But go ahead, try to create content and talk about things that matter and see how far you get. The censorship is unbelievable. And that is another aspect of what we're talking about. Why is so much effort spent on controlling conversations? The ridiculous nature of all the people who make livings now collecting footage off TikTok and rerunning it, you can pull up five of them on any given day and 80% of their content's going to be identical. And why is that? Because that's what was in their feed. That is total control of a conversation, or damn near. And that's why we do what we do here in The Way. And that's why social media for us is nothing more than a billboard that says we're talking over in this place that we protect as best we can. But Weston, is there anything you want to lay down about websites or contact or anything before we wrap up hour one and prep to come in for hour two and drop whatever it is you've been holding?
Yeah, if you have questions about the air and surface technology, the benefits, what would work in your particular case, the email is Weston Scientific. It's WESTON, WestonScientific@gmail.com. But you'll have a link as far as the WestonScientificLLC.com. There's a tab called Shop, S-H-O-P. You want to click on that, and that'll have photographs and pricing of all the different commercial residential units. But before we transition to the second hour, just a heads up, I'm not a fan of the World Economic Forum. These are think tanks, and their perception and their understanding of reality is different to me. So I'm not a fan of the World Economic Forum, but I understand who's all involved, kind of what their intent is. And they work closely with the UN. I'm not a fan of the UN either. But I don't know if you covered it or not, or you will in your subsequent shows, but something is very scary, just a heads up, as Klaus Schwab steps down, maybe from the day-to-day public figure, his replacement, and I don't know the correct pronunciation of his name, but Peter Brabeck Letmathe, perhaps this will help. He was for many, many years the CEO of Nestle's corporation. From someone from my perspective and what I know, that's very disturbing. His perspective, Nestle's, I want to be very neutral, just kind of do research on Nestle's. How it started out, very interesting, but what are they known for over the years? Do your own research, but not taking it out of context, but his philosophy is really that water is not a human right. Access to water is not a human right. Well, that's very controversial, right? You're in those topics that people get emotionally involved. The point being is he's now taking Klaus Schwab's place. The reason why that's important is the last closing the circle, the expression closing the circle, when they used to circle the wagons back in the late 17, early 1800s, the last chain of a global technocracy or a global control is controlling the Earth's water supply, fresh water supply. And this closes the loop, if you get my drift. And I'll just end it at that.
Yeah, new Pope, new CEO for the private corporation that tries to claim dominion over everybody. And I was aware of the whole water thing. There's a lot of change. It's coming quick. But from where I'm standing, the tide will come in. Will it be easy? What's ever easy anymore? I view everything that's going on with a different eye than I used to, because I began to realize if I truly am energy and energy can't be destroyed, then the amount of time that I'll spend here is probably very, very small compared to the amount of time that I will be. And what that urges me to do is do the best while I can here, but don't spend my days being afraid. Because if that's true, I've passed away a number of times. Lord only knows. But this water thing, yeah, it's disturbing. How does a human being stand up, look people in the eye, and tell them they don't have a right to fresh water? Unbelievable. Anyhow, Jason, we're a little over. Anything you want to say before I wrap up hour one?
Tune in for hour two, everybody, because it's going to be fun.
There it is. This has been hour one of episode 626. Hour one is free to everybody by design at crow777radio.com. CROW777radio.com. I think there's only three sevens. Members know to log in. They get access to all the comments sections, the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon, all the imagery that I have shot with my high-end solar telescope. And I am just about to post at least two new member solar videos to include the original footage from when I first discovered the so-called second sun, and the other stuff will be what I've managed to film so far this year under all the chemtrailing. With that, I hope to see you logged in for hour two, which we are prepping up for now. And I guarantee you, whatever is said, if it doesn't appear to be causing harm, we will run it. There it is, man. I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.